10th installment of the Final Boss Blues podcast, hosted on finalbossblues.com. I am Killam, and I'm joined today by our regular co-hosts. We have Reynard Frost.
Yo.
And Despain.
Hello, and I'm happy to announce that now that we are on episode 10, we are officially a real podcast, which is a nice feeling. We've been going at this for 10 weeks, and we have no plans to stop anytime soon. So that said, let's jump
What time is it?
A play or flay.
I think it is about time for a play or flay.
Maybe the what time is it joke is getting old.
maybe. We can go, hey, what time is it, Pinky?
Okay, so we're going to have to find a new joke for that. Good.
Yeah, we'll come up with a new joke regardless.
All right. Reynard, tell us what game we're going to be looking at today.
Today, we're going to be looking at a certain game that's kind of sparked interest called A Nightmare to Remember.
Bum, bum, bum.
Judging from the screenshots, it looks to be a survival horror action game. Doesn't really look very RPG-ish at all, which kind of goes against the vein. But you know what? It's made an RPG maker, so how about them apples? So as our usual formula is, we're going to introduce the author, and then I'm going to read the story in character. And then we're going to go through the topic, and throughout this whole thing, we're just going to judge whether or not, if this were a game on the shelf, would we take it with us to the register, or would we put it back on the shelf, thus being a pay or flay. Anyways, so this is made by Wendell, who says he's also created a game called Helvetios, which just reminds me of Helvetica font. And so let's just get this thing rolling with A Nightmare to Remember. The story goes as follows. In A Nightmare to Remember, you will be in the skin of Albert Cote, a 34-year-old lawyer who has recently arrived in his birth town, Riverwood City. Albert found himself trapped into the town. He didn't know that 6 months ago, the town was isolated from the rest of the world. People started to die and waking up from the dead instants after, hungry and eating anything that's in their way. Their favorite food? Crab apples. I mean, humans. Some say that is a disease. Others say that is a demonic possession. The truth? Far to be found. Far to be found. You have to help Albert survive the most variety of dangers while you fight for your life, solving puzzles, finding strong weapons, killing zombies, and trying to find answers.
All right, before we continue, I want to add that this dude's native language is definitively not English.
Oh, it's Portuguese.
Google Translate, you have failed. All right. It was still kind of like, wait, what is happening? Proofreading. But in that case, it's understandable, so I won't give him too much crap. I didn't understand.
Yeah, bad grammar is always charming on some level.
Yeah. It kind of made me want to change my voice halfway through, but just be like, their favorite food? Human. But anyways, so the features of this game, it uses RE Weapon System ABS, developed by Andre Maker.
Whatever that means.
I guess
it's Resident Evil type combat, I assume.
Oh, a classic Resident Evil fan game / tribute, even though it has nothing referencing to Resident Evil. But I'm
which isn't that bad. I'd rather have it as an actual tribute than a fan game because you don't use the same characters.
It's a tribute, in my opinion, not a fan game. A fan game is like, it's Resident Evil -X. But this is more of it's a tribute. It's like Resident Evil really inspires me with this game, which is fine. So it's going to
end. Totally on topic for what we're going to be talking about later in the episode.
Indeed. So weapons like everything you've seen in Resident Evil. Each weapon has its own bullet amount, like in Resident Evil. Simple HUD showing health bar current bullets, like in regular action games. The bizarre places to visit includes a subway, a hospital / sanitarium, a school, a factory, the city streets, and more. There's different endings.
I hope there's a sewer level.
Yes! Sound of the player's steps that depends on the kind of tile he is walking on, which I don't think is a feature, but I think is a nice touch. I think that's really nice to throw it in there, and more to be announced. For the most part, it's the locations. I like that as listed as a feature, which could also be shown in screenshots, so it's kind of in the gray area for me. Different endings, yes, that is a feature. And the rest of that, the feature list seems fine. I mean, I'm glad that he pointed out, Resident Evil.
I mean, personally, I would think that a lot of the features could be summed up in this game, you use guns and can shoot things instead
of... Yeah, exactly.
But I guess it works. I don't have too much to say about that. Should we move on to the screenshots?
Yes.
I think that's where the most of what we're going to be talking about is in the screenshots here.
Shines the most. So starting with the first one, we see our buddy Albert holding some kind of strange object, shooting yellow pixels.
It looks like a Gatling gun.
I don't know. It looks kind
like the way he's holding it, like it's sort of like this
he's
big
thing.
He's
holding it in hand.
It looks like an ocarina to me, honestly.
Yeah, I kind of... It looks like he's holding a giant gray turd. I can't tell what that weapon is. So that's a tip right there, is to make sure that whatever items the player is using, they're easily identifiable.
Yeah, just add the gun to the character sprite or something like that.
Yeah, you know, either add the gun to the character sprite or have an icon on your HUD as well that shows this is the gun you're using.
I like that idea.
It's kind of, I have no idea. If I had a little icon that said, you know, Gatling gun, I'd be like, okay, I can sort of see it, you know, 2D's kind of limited, but whatever.
Oh, the next screenshot looks like a over-the-shoulder rocket launcher.
Yeah. Or
but it's shooting Deku pellets.
It's shooting coins.
Yeah, it's shooting old coins. I have to say, though, that his map layouts are well done. Looks like he's using the modern tile sets.
I hate the graphics.
You hate the graphics? I'm not
I don't hate the graphics, but I think there's a lot of really, really unfortunate inconsistency here. Like, you look at the Coke vending machine, it's just ugly. It doesn't fit.
Yeah, the Coke vending...
The bus doesn't really fit. And a lot of things here. It seems like there's a lot of weird inconsistencies in the graphics.
Yeah, he's taken a bunch of tile sets that fit with the theme and slapped them together. He hasn't really, you know... consistency is a thing that should be worked on, yes. But as far as his layouts and the placement of those resources...
Not to mention the chibi RTP-style characters just...
Yeah, exactly.
It is a boner kill.
That's always my gripe with these kind of games. You want to have a tone set, and you can't do that with the RTP chibi or the RTP tiles.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a good job with the lighting with the tiles. He just needs to work on the consistency and to make his characters taller.
No, but I agree. The layouts are easy to read, and the lighting actually isn't that bad.
Yeah, you can see where you're supposed to be going. I mean, the level design seems like it's pretty solid so far from the screenshots, at least. Like, you can see the areas. You know where you're supposed to be going for the most part, and that's definitely always a plus.
And there's some more bonus screenshots in the Introducing the Asylum section, as he was showcasing that as an update to his second version of the demo, it looks like. And we've got more of the same. I mean, he's got a little ROTP icon showing gold coins in a pouch on the second screenshot of that. And that stands out. It doesn't match anything at all.
But the way it's glowing, I can actually see that kind of thing working if he uses it consistently for all kind of collectible objects.
Yeah, because he did the same thing for the little diary in the middle there. It's got a question mark over it as well as it's highlighted with a light there.
Sometimes inconsistency can work if it's intentional because there's consistency within the inconsistency, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean, exactly. Like, you would have the character stand out.
No, I'm fine with having the light on the object. It was more of the art style of the icon doesn't match with the tile sets. But yeah, it's having the highlighted with a light to go, this is a key item, that's a good thing. And that's also from Resident Evil. You'd see a key item, it would glint. It'd have a little glinting icon that made me go, oh, throughout all this 3D mess, that's something I should be investigating. Which is good, especially with all this, not sure if parallax.
I like how the two refrigerators and then the two shelves with bottles, they have the exact same kind of blood splatter patterns on them.
Yes. So those are the screenshots, and he's got a demo for it, so if you're interested, folks at home listening, feel free to check it out. But Despain, what are your thoughts on this game?
From my experience, this is definitely not the first game of its kind that I've seen in RPG Maker. There are lots of games that you come across that try to put the shooting into RPG Maker game like this. Some of them it works, some of them it doesn't. And it really comes down to play the demo and see how it feels. This is very, very, very difficult for me to give it a play or play based on the screenshots. Because in an action game like this, you really have to see how it feels. If the controls are tight, if there's any kind of weird bugs when you're playing, if you're shooting, that kind of thing. If it's fast-paced, how's the balance, that kind of stuff. So, based on that, based on the fact that I really need to play it to really make a judgment, I would actually say I'd give it a play just to give the demo a shot before I make any hard and fast judgments. So
Well, that's the whole purpose of this, is to see if this were on the shelf, would you take it with you? All right, this looks interesting. I'll give it a try. Would you play the demo based on this topic?
If this were on the shelf, I would not purchase it. However, if there was a free demo download on Steam, I would download the free demo and check it out.
There we go.
So I'll say it's a play, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Killam, what do you think?
I agree with the Spain. I don't really have enough information to go by the thread alone about the actual merits the game has. Like, the story is kind of vague, but
I like that the story is very minimal because the game seems like it's all about action. You know, like, I don't need to get a whole in-depth story if the whole point of the game is take a gun and go kill zombies. I really like
exactly.
It's minimal.
Exactly.
I like that the focus of this thread is on the screenshots to show that the game has an aura and the way it feels. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's personal for me then because I love zombies and I love the idea of them, so I want to see them be explored biologically and through the plot. So that might just be my gripe with it because it's my
personal zombie. It's a zombie shooting game. He threw an excuse plot. He's basing it off of Resident Evil, and Resident Evil has very much excuse plot through most of it. It's not really that in depth. It's
not necessarily the first one.
You can jump into it, yes, but. The basic thing is go into location, fight zombies, escape, huge explosion, credits roll.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I agree with that. You explore it if you want to, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, other than that, I agree with the Spain. The screenshots are all – they're pretty good, but I don't have enough information to give it a play or play, so I need to play a demo, which means I'll have to give it a play, too.
Okay. In my opinion, pretty much the only advice I could say as far as this goes is work on making your art consistent and just work on making your art consistent and readable, polish your UI a bit so all elements of gameplay are, you know, shown.
Yeah, but don't go over the top. I do like that it's minimal and it's in the top corner. It's not like this big massive thing with a face and everything.
Yeah.
I like how it's very minimal and that's definitely a plus.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, adding a gun icon there, or at least showing off a menu screenshot would also be nice to see beyond this thing, how menus and interacting with items and stuff are shown. But for me, I would have to say, I would say it's a play. Nothing's really struck me as, like, oh, this looks terrible, or, oh, this needs huge amounts of improvement. I mean, showing a lot of in-game shots, like, he's showcasing a lot of gameplay, a lot of scenarios. Especially with this asylum where it's showing items being highlighted.
Yeah, it looks like it has a really nice lonely feel to it, which I kind of dig.
Yeah, yeah. And the lighting is very well done. I mean, he's got some consistencies, but I'm guessing the lighting on the second screenshot of the first batch on the wall is meant to showcase the little eye design on the wall, but I think it should be kind of shrunk a bit, maybe. Either way, bottom line is, it's a play. So that's a play unanimously across the board.
Yeah, go check out this guy's demo.
Yeah, and this has been A Nightmare to Remember by Wendell.
And as always, you can find it in the project development section on RPG Maker web forums.
Yeah, damn Skippy. So, moving on.
We're going to be talking about influences and inspiration.
Indeed. We're going to discuss what type of games and subject matter really inspires us in the games we like to make. Between the hosts here and also what other type of whatever type of things make us really want to make games, what type of gameplay we want to do. We're going to split this up into two parts. So just for today, we're going to talk about what type of games inspire us. So to start off, Killam, can you tell us a bit about what type of games and what about them really inspired you, either growing up or today?
Well, my very first game was actually Mega Man X for the Super Nintendo. I got that, I think, when I was like maybe 3 years old. I don't really remember the details specifically, but
you're a baby.
Guys, I'm 14. Like, come on.
You're not 14, but I have to agree. Mega Man X being your first game is kind of a late bloomer compared to.
Sorry, I'm not Mario, Final Fantasy, whatever. Anyway,
Mario.
I picked Mega Man X first because gameplay is the most important part of any game, and Mega Man X for me is the best example of any gameplay I've ever seen. The overall theme of growing, the music, everything blended perfectly with the action, and I just loved it.
Music is extremely well done.
Boomer Quanger stage. Oh,
yes!
That, it was just fantastic. That actually influenced, I think, my love for video game music was that game itself.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
After gameplay, you have the story, which is Final Fantasy IV, my second game, which I got. And that really is what ingrained with me that's not a sentence. That really it gave me basically the importance of story and characters in a game. It showed it to me and how invested I could be in a game. And it really helped me connect with the actual story itself. And I realized that gaming is a strong medium for stories, and that's what really actually influenced me to make a game, period.
Yeah,
which is why I'm an RPG maker.
I agree with that. I had the same experience when I played that growing up. When fucking the twins get turned into statues and other moments in the game, I was like, oh my god, no! Golvez! You know.
Yeah, like,
spoiler alert, but it's been 20 years. But anyway.
Yeah, Mega Man X was like fun. It was action-y, but
yeah.
Final Fantasy IV, I cared about Cecil when he first got expelled from Baron. I cared. I'm like, no, why are you going to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, the story was really done with that. I mean, X had some good story moments as far as, you know, Zero and all that, but it was very minimal. But the
exactly.
X, I agree. X definitely shines with music and gameplay, but Final Fantasy II or IV, but it just blew away with story and characters. I mean, nowadays it's kind of hokey, but I definitely agree with it being a good first inspiration.
And then after that, there's like Final Fantasy X for strategy and show how in-depth you can get with the combat as far as RPGs go. And another game I actually really liked was Resident Evil. Not so much of the gameplay at all. It was actually the setting exploration, which I touched up on before with the game we just reviewed. You could read all the logs, which were entirely optional. You could really be immersed in the world if you chose to. And that really, really had a deep impact on me. Like, I played the game when I was maybe 7 years old, and I had nightmares till I was maybe 14. I'm not even joking. Every single night, I would actually be scared of zombies. Like, it really had an impact on me, and it, to this day, is one of the most important games I've ever played.
I had a haunting experience with that game. I played that when I was in my teens, and it was when I got killed by a group of zombies in Resident Evil 2. And they kept death animations.
Oh, no!
Like, you get, where basically you died, and you'd fall to the ground, and the zombies would just be tearing away at your corpse. And that just messed with my head as a kid. I was just like, oh my god, they're just ripping me apart. It wasn't like Resident Evil 3 or the later ones where you just fall over and it goes, you died. It was just, no, I'm lying on the ground getting torn apart by zombies. It's just, messed with my head. Very, very much resonated with the atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, I've honestly had nightmares for 7 years straight. Like, I'm trying to make that up. I literally had nightmares for 7 years straight.
All right, so
it was rough.
Kill him confirmed for baby. Now, Despic.
Dude, I played a game about zombies when I was 7 years old. Like, seriously. Like, do you know how traumatizing that was?
I understand. I understand. I played Doom when I was a little kid, and I loved it and had no nightmares, and I loved shooting demons, and it was great because I'm a man. No, I'm kidding. But anyways, Despain.
All right, thanks.
I can understand. It was very much Resident Evil was very much, at the time, a very impactful game as far as the lore and what they were doing. So I can understand you having nightmares for a while with the whole imagination type thing. But Despain, what type of games inspire you?
Yeah, my story is a little different from you guys. I did not grow up on the Super Nintendo. I had the old NES.
Me too.
The only game I ever played on that was the original Mario. So like I never really played a lot of games, just kind of that once in a while. But then we had a Sega Genesis. I did not grow up on Chrono Trigger or Mega Man. I grew up on Sonic the Hedgehog and the Lost Vikings and
Lost Vikings. Ah, I had that also on Super Nintendo.
Yeah,
but,
Rock and
oh
Roll
my
Racing,
God, Lost Vikings,
Echo the Dolphin. I mean, I grew up
Earthworm Jim.
Yeah, I played that. I didn't play like all the way through, but I had it. Yeah. But yeah, I did not really grow up playing RPGs. I grew up playing a lot of platformers. And, I mean, you know, supposedly SNES also had great platformers too, but the big thing, Genesis was not really much of an RPG system. And that kind of taste grew with me. I went to the N64 after that, which is well known as having amazing platformers. And my favorite genre of game is just platformer games. I mean, my biggest influences are from platformers. You look at Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, some of my favorite games of all time. I actually beat Banjo-Kazooie yesterday. Not for the first time, of course, but like I started playing it again last week, you know, here and there, and I beat it again yesterday. I was like, yes, I beat Grunty. And I'm probably going to start playing Banjo-Tooie later next week, just for the fun of it. But, I mean, these platformer games have been a huge influence to me because it's so much about gameplay. And it's so much about level design and really getting the most out of every level. I mean, you play lots of RPGs, and there's lots of walking around finding secrets. And in these platformers, there's secrets like that too, but they're hidden in different ways. Like, you have to interact a lot more to find things or open things up. You have to use a lot more skills. And if you look at the kind of games that I would make with RPG Maker, I really push for a lot of interactivity on the map. Like, all my RPG Maker games, you're able to blow stuff up with bombs, you have shovels you can dig, you might have swords you can cut grass down, stuff like that. And that kind of influence for me comes a lot from growing up with platformers less than RPGs. And I do find most RPG Maker, you know, walk around getting into battles, I find a lot of that pretty boring. Because I'm so used to having a more immediate, tangible effect. You know, you push a button, this happens, you know, you can interact with the world immediately. I really, really love that in games.
Yeah, I saw that too, with interacting with the environment. And a big thing that kicked that up was Link to the Past with the bombs. Yes. And all the other stuff like that. And even in my own game, I'm like, I think I'm going to make it so I'm going to have this big guy just be able to smash walls with his hammer and all kinds of shit like that. So it's definitely fun to throw in those little details. So I agree with platformers and Zelda and a bunch of other games like that, where it's not just walk around in circles, talk to character, move on, fight monster. Being able to actually interact with the environment really brightens up the gameplay.
Yeah, I love being able to really make the most out of an area like that. And, I mean, more recently I've been playing games like Psychonauts, which is fantastic in terms of, not only is it a great platformer on the same kind of level as Banjo-Kazooie, that kind of thing, but it also has great, and I mean fantastic, artistic design, the character design, the voices, the writing. It has a really, yes, really strong identity, and that is probably my favorite thing in games, for a game to have a really strong, unique identity. For you to be able to look at a game and say, this game is itself. It's not anything else. It's just what it is, you know? And that's the biggest influence for me, is to, if I can think of a game and I think of the entire experience, you know? Yeah. And if I can put that into my game, if I can encourage more people to put that into their games, I'll feel like something good is going down, you know? Because there's nothing better than for a game to really stand on its own, on its own merit in lots of ways where it comes together for a whole.
That's something a lot of people should aspire to, is instead of going, oh, my game's like this game, it should be all people play your game and go, oh, yeah, it's like your game.
Yeah.
You know, and Psychonauts definitely did that. Like, I think of Psychonauts, and I could draw some correlations between other types of games that were around at the time. I'm like, oh, it's like Jak and Daxter, but, oh, my God, psychic kids at a camp and all this other fun stuff. There are other games like it as far as gameplay is structured. Like you said, it's similar to Banjo-Kazooie, but as far as just its whole presentation, atmosphere, story, it really stands out on its own.
Yeah, and how it all comes together. And I think the best example of this in an RPG,
Earthbound.
Nope. Also maybe Paper Mario.
Yeah, but, I mean, say Paper Mario.
But Earthbound is, like I said, I didn't grow up on the SNES. I didn't play Earthbound until many years later, after I found RPG Maker. And I was like, all right, let's go find a Super Nintendo emulator and go legally purchase a game of Earthbound so then I don't feel bad about emulating it, right?
Yes. Yes, of course.
So
we have all done in the world.
Yeah. So I played Earthbound years later, and I really love that whole sense of consistency with it and that it doesn't take itself too seriously. And, I mean, you look at some of the other games that these guys are talking about, and mine are a little different, because my games, the games that inspire me the most, that have the most influence on me, are funny. They're goofy. I like a lot more cartoony games than, you know, you can kill him likes Resident Evil while I'm talking about Banjo-Kazooie. You know, there's a pretty big difference there. But I really like that a game doesn't have to take itself too seriously. If a game can have jokes, it can have humor, and I think it adds a lot more to the fun factor. For me, games are more about fun. And I really like to really amp the fun element of a game and make sure it's just an enjoyable, entertaining experience. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to sit back and, you know, I don't like Resident Evil because I don't really want to play a game that's scary. I want to play a game that's goofy and fun and makes me smile and laugh.
Well, to play devil's advocate as far as that goes, some people find either being scared or being in these action scenarios, like, I never found Resident Evil scary. It, certain scenes had a bit more of impact than others that made me slightly horrified, but never really terrified. But I enjoyed it because it's just, oh, I'm in this tense situation. I want to kill zombies and stuff. And to me, that's a lot of fun. And it's also with people who have got more serious stories in RPGs. They have fun observing or engaging in that drama. But also what I wanted to say as far as the humor factor with the games like Earthbound, Banjo-Kazooie is those are great games people should refer to when they're talking about trying to make their own parody or humor games.
Oh, I
see a lot.
Games.
Yeah, like that's the reaction a lot of people have. I see that stuff in RPG Maker communities, and they're just really poor humor, really cheap jokes. There's no consistency to it. It's bland. You should definitely, because Earthbound both takes itself seriously but doesn't take itself seriously at the same time. It's goofy, but at the same time, the characters aren't breaking the fourth wall all the time and, you know, going like herp derp 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 derp. No, it's funny, but within the game world, the characters think their situation is something they have to deal with. Like with Banjo-Kazooie and stuff, yeah, it's all goofy and stuff, but at the same time,
Banjo-Kazooie breaks the fourth wall a lot.
It does. Yeah. It does. But also, you know, it does break the fourth wall, and there's nothing wrong with breaking the fourth wall as long as it's tastefully done. Deadpool. But it's mostly that you want to make it so your characters, at least in the story, are taking themselves seriously. You know, you've got a overarching, we need to get this done, but it's sprinkled with humor throughout. You don't want to just sit there and go, we don't care, burp, burp, poop joke.
Yeah, there have to be stakes. There always have to be stakes.
Exactly. Because yeah, what RPG is complete without stakes.
Right, sorry. I want to touch up on something Despain said about why he plays games, and I found this interesting. You play games for fun, right? I play games for the immersive feel, actually. Like what Rainer said about Resident Evil, I play games because I want to be inside a different world. So it was kind of interesting how you said that, because I kind of just touched up on that
and
why we play
how
games.
You have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
games universally are all about having fun. Despain's just version of having fun is he likes more colorful, unique, you know, just humoristic worlds.
Well, there's lots of different ways to have fun. Like, if I'm watching a movie or something, my idea of fun is a lot different than when I'm playing a game. Like, I went to see Les Mis last weekend, and I cried for 2 hours straight, and it was some of the most fun I've had at a movie in years.
Mm-hmm. And don't cry.
It's a really sad movie. And it's really intense because you get into the music and all, but I had a blast doing it because it was the experience, you know? It's all
Les
about Miserables. The experience.
Somebody steals a loaf of bread and shit goes down.
It's an intense, really sad show, but yeah. I had a lot of fun doing it because it's more about the experience as a whole and the spectacle.
And that's how with Killam playing games or even me playing games. It's just it's that experience.
And there are some games that are like that for me. I want to talk about another influence of mine, a more recent influence, is BioShock. Yes. And that is pretty far on the other end of the spectrum, if you know, from Banjo-Kazooie, Psychonauts, Earthbound. It's a pretty heavy, serious game, and it's all about exploration. But the reason I want to talk about BioShock as an influence for me is because of the way that the world is put together. It's not necessarily that I like the exploration, even though I do. It's that the world feels like an actual world because of the way that it's put together, the way that all the different characters come together to make a city realistic. And that's I can't help but mention The Wire here is one of the biggest influences me in general, not necessarily just in games, the TV show, the HBO series The Wire, because it's about how the whole city comes together, and they talk about the budget, you know, they talk about the politics of the careers and that kind of stuff. And to me, on that level, when it comes to world building, being able to look at where money comes from, where the money goes, I mean, this is kind of going deep, but it's a huge influence for me because it puts a level of realism, a way to relate to a game world, a story world, and it just makes everything seem more like it makes sense. Like, there's a kind of glue that holds it together in reality. And I think that BioShock did a really solid job of that, making it seem like it all made sense, and so I can't help but mention BioShock there.
I need to play that still.
You haven't played BioShock? I haven't played BioShock 2. I bought it on Steam, but I haven't played it yet.
I haven't played BioShock 2
yet. How did you
yet.
Critique it? What?
BioShock, he's played BioShock 1, not 2, but...
Ah, I didn't play any of them.
You should. They're on Steam. They're cheap. They're fun games.
They aren't an RPG, so I'm not going to do that.
they have RPG elements. They absolutely do.
No, they don't. I hate when people say that.
No, it does. It does. It's got
we have EXP, so it's an RPG.
No, it's not. It's not EXP. It's got.
You have magic
it's got
spells.
Skill management. It's got skill tiers, and it's
and there's
got
a hacking mini game. That's kind of like a. Like a bad RPG Maker game.
Any other things that influence
you? The last influence I want to talk about is really about the way I approach game design in terms of balancing and making it fun for the player. And that's from a game that's not a video game at all, but that's from the card game The Magic the Gathering.
Well, there is an online version.
There's an online version. I sink way too much money into that. But if you know me, you know I play a lot of Magic. I actually have a tattoo from Magic the Gathering.
Wait, what? Are you serious?
You didn't know that?
No, you never told anyone.
Yeah, no, I have a tattoo of the mana symbols from Magic the Gathering. But
oh, wow, that's really cool, dude. It's really cool.
Fuck you. I've spent a lot of time reading articles from the people who create the game Magic, and that's one of the wonderful things about the game, is that the creators and developers of the game are so open about their process and how they develop the game, and I think that's one of the reasons why the game is such a huge success even 20 years later. And the way they approach the game and how they explore the player mentality, it's amazing to me that these game developers really talk about the psychology of the players and how they sculpt a game to really sculpt a player's experience, while leading a player down a path without directly telling him how to do something, and how they can and how through testing and serious development they can really make a game feel the way they want it to feel and give it its own identity. For every Magic set, for every block that comes out, it feels new, even though a lot of the cards and mechanics are similar to old ones. And that's something that really inspires me and influences me in game design on other levels.
I agree completely.
About rewarding the player, and a lot of that actually comes from what I've read about Magic the Gathering and how recent Magic design. I talked about Zendikar on a previous podcast, I think, and how recent Magic design is steering the game in a direction where the players are going to be doing things they want to do anyway, reward them for doing that. And that concept for me has just opened my mind so much in terms of game design.
That's a really good line to have, is to just reward the player for stuff they're going to want to do anyway. And another thing I wanted to highlight was definitely the keeping your player's psychology under consideration. Like, you want to design the game to kind of shape their experience while at the same time letting them have the freedom to kind of develop their own experience within that.
Yeah, so that's been a huge influence for me. So, Raynard, what about your biggest influences on game design?
My biggest influences on game design are, to probably nobody who knows me's surprise, is the Persona series of games.
Nerd.
Because it mixes everything I enjoy about RPGs, where I've got my character interaction, I've got my dungeon crawling, and I've got my fantastic music.
And dating sim.
That's under character interaction. But yeah,
anime.
anime. But... The anime is not even that required. I just like interacting with characters, but if it weren't anime, it probably would be lesser. But there you go, kill him. Persona really inspired me in the sense that they do, at least in 3 and 4, they do really well with characters. Fleshing out the characters, the interaction with the characters, how the player can interact with the characters. I mean, it's pretty much straightforward. Push button, go to this location, watch story, make choices, and in a kind of pseudo-visual novel aspect. But I do enjoy it because the dialogue's really well done. The characters each have their own goals, inspirations, and you get to kind of shape or influence them to kind of make the choices that you feel should be best for that. You kind of help through making these choices, where it's kind of you have to pick the right choice to continue the story, whereas if you pick the wrong choice, you just piss them off and go elsewhere. But I found it really interesting where, in the sense of, you get to see these characters go along their personal arcs. So for characters, Persona definitely inspired me on that. Also with just simplistic battles. I mean, they've got enough flair with the whole, you know, one more hit and stuff like that, but at the same time, they're pretty straightforward and they're also very fast. I really like in turn-based battles where my battles are fast. Like, if I can finish it within 3 rounds, I'm a happy camper. if it goes any longer than that, I'm just like, oh, this enemy is taking too long. I just want to kill it, move on, get my experience, blah. So, I mean, one round, I'm like, oh, well, that was too easy. But with, you know, two or three, in my opinion, is kind of the sweet spot to go for. Another game that inspired me was another RPG, Lufia 2. And that inspired me mostly with Lufia 2, to me, was kind of the fusion between Final Fantasy and Legend of Zelda. Because they had...
Yeah, that's a good way.
That game's well known for its puzzles, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They included puzzles in this kind of Final Fantasy paradigm where it's, you know, explore world map, go into dungeons, blah, 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 blah. But both it and Breath of Fire threw in puzzles running around. And if you messed up on the puzzle, you could leave the room, come back, the puzzle would be reset. But it'd be a nice little break instead of just going, here's a monster, beat it, move on. It's like, no, here's a puzzle, challenge your brain for a bit, move on. And it also showed monsters on the map instead of just walking around randomly.
Yes.
Yeah, it had map encounters instead of just having random encounters. And to me, I really like that because it was just, oh, okay, if I don't want to fight, I can just dodge all of these sprites. But if I do want to fight, then it's, you know, oh, okay, I can just run straight to these characters, get them all done on the map. And it's also, in my opinion, from a design aspect, easier to pace that because you can go, oh, okay, on this map, I'm going to have 10 encounters. At the end of these encounters, no matter how many or different types of enemies they fight, they should be at this point. And they can leave the map and come back and get more encounters if they want to grind, but through a single pass, they defeat all the enemies, the player should be at this point. It's a lot easier.
Do the enemies respawn in that game?
Yes.
I think so. Like, if you leave the map and come back, the enemies return.
Yeah, they do.
In years, so I'd have to refresh on that. But, yeah, it was really nice because you could grind in the sense of just leave the map, come back, get more enemies, and you don't have to run in a circle. But it was also the same as from a design aspect. It was just really easy to figure out pacing, where the player should be at a certain point. Another influence was Chrono Trigger. Everyone loves that game, or everyone hates that game. Either way. Chrono Trigger really inspired me as far as story goes. You know, Killen mentioned Final Fantasy IV, and that also inspired me with gameplay, but
had sweet graphics.
Chrono Trigger definitely had sweet graphics. It was great for mapping and atmosphere. The music was kind of eh, in my opinion. I mean, it's good music, but Final Fantasy and Mega Man X especially had way better music. But Chrono Trigger, as far as... it was just an all-around package. It was one of the best RPGs.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger has a really experience to it. You know, you think Chrono Trigger and you know exactly what you're in for.
Exactly. The combat system was different than what was going around a lot there. The atmosphere was really well done. The different types of locations you got to visit. I mean, the graphics and mapping were fantastic. The combat was solid. And I never felt, like, even though it was still, you know, run around in a map, random battle pops up, I never felt angry when a fight popped up. I felt...
You get pumped.
I can fight now. Let's do this.
I love how the battles happen on the same map, right? Like, you hit your enemy and then all the characters jump out. It's like, yeah, let's do it, you know?
Yeah. That really popped out to me. Chrono Trigger had two things, and it showed me that players shouldn't go, ugh, another fight. They should go, fuck yes, I get to fight. Let's do this.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger
has
that.
That's what you want to go through. You want to go, oh, I get to fight something. Let's do this. Yes, it's fun. And the other thing was story. Chrono Trigger was the first game I played where the protagonist, spoilers, dies. And it made me go, oh my god, no, feels. I'm like, no, you can't kill off the protagonist. What is this? And then, you know, later on you can revive him through doing time travel shit. But you can also beat the game with Chrono being dead. So, you know, different types of interactions made me really go, holy shit, that's awesome. And another thing I liked is you could fight the final boss at any point in the game once you first encounter him. It's just, all right, we've unlocked the final boss for you. If you play through the rest of the game, you'll get the best ending. But whenever you feel you're ready to fight this guy, you can just stop and get a certain ending by fighting him. And it wasn't just, oh, you beat him, game over. It was you beat him, you get a bad end. If he kills you, you get a bad ending. Which it could just be, okay, the ending of the game is you lost. Enjoy. Which also really inspired me with that. I was like, holy shit, you can do more than just a game over screen. You can actually go, your story ended right here. You know, deal with it. Another game that inspired me, which was later than the whole RPG and Super Nintendo era, was the Metal Gear Solid games. And the reason that inspired me was, once again, was storytelling. I mean, I really liked the characters. I really liked the dialogue. The gameplay was fun. And it was one of those games that I thought I was going to hate because I wasn't really in the whole military type thing. But the reason I love it so much is because it's weird. It was the anime of military games. And, you know, I'm fighting giant robots. There's cyborg ninjas. I mean, I played Splinter Cell and I was like, Rainbow Six. You know, I was just like, all right, whatever. I don't care. Like, Splinter Cell is interesting. And if I want, like, a more gritty, realistic stealth game, I'm like, all right, Splinter Cell. But Metal Gear was just like, this is the anime, Japanese-y fucking fantasy of military-type stuff. And, I mean,
yeah. Metal Gear Solid is the one game in my entire life where I liked it just because the character was such a badass.
Exactly. And the great thing is like through interviews with Kojima I've read, it's he based Solid Snake off of Snake Plissken, obviously, from Escape from LA / New York, and Rambo. And I'm like, yeah, you take two badass characters that are from this whole 90s, 80s shit. And you
American badass characters.
Exactly. And I'm just like, all right, yeah, you know, fucking this character's a badass. You know, he's both a badass, but he's also got depth. Whereas, you know, it's just all like, well, fucking emotions.
And the Metal Gear games are funny, too, aren't they? Like, aren't there a lot of fourth-wall-breaking jokes?
Like, it doesn't take itself completely seriously. And
yeah, it's weird humor, though. Like, really kind of sketchy, almost.
I thought it was great. But to summarize it up, it's the anime of military games. And to me, it really stood out and showed you don't have to follow a paradigm. You can go off these weird tangents. You know, as long as your dialogue is interesting, you can talk for a bit, although with an RPG, I wouldn't do that. And it also showed me the value of good voice acting. That was one of the first few games I played that really had voice acting. And I was like, holy shit, this blows my mind. Whereas before, I was just text. Another game that inspired me was Breath of Fire 2, which I really like the whole being able to turn into a dragon, which is badass. The art style was really well done. It was a fantasy RPG, but it just the music was cool. The battles were fun. I really liked the whole shift. It was a three-quarter angle, which I didn't see until other games like Suikoden, which also did the whole three-quarter thing, which was also kind of an inspiration, but I won't go into that too much because everyone knows about Suikoden, I hope. But Breath of Fire, it was just, for me, it was gameplay aspects and the art and animation and just all that stuff. Like, Breath of Fire 3, to me, has some of the best 2D animation in an RPG as far as how the characters have their little subtle animations and stuff. It's not just, like, shift torso up and down. They had really just all over the place that I hadn't seen since, like, Final Fantasy VI. But my final inspiration is I'm going to go on a slight tangent and mention book / movie, much like Despain mentioned with The Wire, and that is the Game of Thrones show, and obviously the Ice and Fire book series. But the reason that inspired me, I mean, the show inspired me due to the costumes and the atmosphere and the dialogue, like interacting with characters. That whole thing made me go, holy shit.
Yeah, it's totally believable. Like, you believe this world is real.
Exactly. It was a fantasy world that took place after the fantasy had died, and it's slowly coming back. And that really, it gave it a gritty, realistic atmosphere. The costumes were really well done. It was very believable. And it also, both the books and the show, taught me. It not taught me, because I'd already known about it through, like, English classes and writing stuff. But it really sunk in the whole point of kill your darlings. Like, I don't think that show, or I don't think that story would be as interesting if the characters I liked.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. If the characters I like didn't die, like, if they didn't kill off Ned Stark, if you haven't watched season one, you're way late to the party. I've got my grace period on that one. Like, when they killed him, I was like, what are you? No!
Yeah, like, he's the main character, and then he dies at the end of the first one. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's like, what? So, it taught me right then, you know, when that happened, I was like, nobody is safe. Nobody is safe. So, it really taught me that, you know, the whole time I'm like, he's gonna make it out, right? Like, he's gonna make it out. He's gonna make it. Like, they're gonna do it, because they keep dropping hints like, oh, you've got these ways out and you can do this stuff. But the reason why he dies is because he is a certain type of person. Like, he's very much about honor and doing things the right way. And he had plenty of ways out. He had plenty of ways to avoid the situation, but he stuck with it. It helped show that, you know, a character has their own worldview, and even if they have another way out, if it's not something that they themselves would be comfortable doing, they're not going to do it. And it also showed that don't be afraid to just kill off a character, because it makes people more invested. And obviously there's a fine line with it. If you go too far in one direction, you're killing off everybody. People just go, oh, well, they're going to die. Walking Dead. And it's, you know, you have to basically just go, okay, well, you know, oh, are they going to make it? Like later on in the series, you're like, oh, well, that person's probably going to die. But at the same time, I'm like, oh shit, what's going to happen to this person? Because sometimes characters get stuff that's worse than death. You know, they get totally fucked up, which I won't spoil that because that's later on in the series and they haven't shown it on the show
yet.
One
of my favorite parts of Game of Thrones, and this totally ties back what I was saying about The Wire talking about the budget and stuff, is how the king, the crown, is... they owe so much money to Littlefinger because, like, he's been paying for all their stuff because,
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, like, that kind of stuff, that level of fantasy building, you don't see that in most RPG games or even most fantasy worlds at all, that you have to think about, you know, where does money come from? How does the economy work? How do the politics fall into it? And Game of Thrones does that really well, and that's probably the reason why it's so believable.
Yeah, because that's definitely it. That's another great thing that inspires me from it, is it's just the world building on that, where you not only have the character arcs going about their own personal squabbles, but you've also got, you know, there's this overarching story with the kingdom itself. The kingdom is its own character. The different regions you explore each are their own characters. I mean, you've got, you know, north of the wall, you've got the wall. Their situations and with the people inside there, not just purely just the individual characters themselves, really helps flesh it out. You know, like you said, with the whole where does money come from? Oh, they owe this guy money. And that gives that character inspiration to fuck a few other people over to get more money. And it really helps set shit down. So,
yeah, Game of Thrones. Yeah, great. Yeah, great. Awesome.
Not anime enough for you, Killen.
not anime enough.
All right, so let's move on and talk about some influences and inspiring games that affect all of us and that we
Metroid
think...
Metroid Prime!
And that we think should affect all of you, too. There are some games out there that are pretty much universally recognized as massive influences, some of the big ones being The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, that kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit about what kind of games that everybody should be playing, everybody should be able to get something out of, and how they have an influence on us in terms of game design.
Metroid Prime! We've talked about it in almost every single episode.
Yeah, we missed a couple of them.
We did the last ones, it kind of slipped our minds.
We make up for it now.
Yeah. Oh, you're in for it now. You're getting more than a mention. It's a feature. But Metroid Prime is a huge inspiration, or it should be, for everyone because of atmosphere and level design, which we dedicated a whole podcast to, and we could gush about even more. But to summarize, it's basically first person, no dialogue, yet the world was alive and vibrant, and you felt a part of it.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for me about Metroid Prime, like everything else, like I've been saying, like my big theme, is that it feels like a really whole experience. It all comes together. You play Metroid Prime, and you're playing Metroid Prime, right?
Yes. You're not playing Metroid Prime and going, oh, this reminds me of this game. It's, no, I'm fucking playing Metroid Prime.
You're just totally in the experience, and it all comes together in a really beautiful whole.
Yes.
Yeah, Metroid Prime for me, I actually picked it up completely on a whim. I didn't really know what I was going to get into. But when I first played it, the level of world immersion in that game is something that I'll never be able to experience ever again. I was physically Samus. When I scanned something and she learned something, I learned something new because we were both exploring a foreign world. The level – that game is just – the ultimate example.
And when there's explosions character. Or bright lights, you can see the reflection of her eyes in the visor. That shit was
so exactly.
Cool.
Oh, like the mirror. Oh my god. Honestly, that game till this day will be the prime example, basically, of what world immersion really should be.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely a game that, if you're listening to it, it's not listening to it, but if you're playing it, it just jumps out and goes, holy shit. This is alive. Like, I've gushed about the intro of that game so many times because it gets straight to the point, introduces gameplay elements. It goes from what you think is going to be a third-person 3D experience and jumps straight into first-person. Like, every time I jump out and the camera zooms into her helmet and I see the visor, I'm like, fuck yes! I'm going from the observer to the participant.
Yeah, exactly. And Metroid, in that game, Metroid scare the shit out of me because they're taking my life force because I am Samus. they're sucking on my life force, and it was so scary, and I hated going to the mines, and I had to fuck a Metro. What am I gonna do? Scared the crap out of me.
It's like we said before many a time. It is a prime example of immersion. So definitely,
yes,
as we've said in almost every episode, pick up Metroid Prime, play it. It's a really well done game, and it's really just seriously it. If you don't glean anything from that, then, in my opinion, game design isn't for you, because you're just obtuse.
Moving on, the next game that everybody is probably familiar with, and if you're not, get familiar with it.
Pokemon!
Pocket Monsters.
Pocket Monsters.
Faggot Monsters.
Pokemon Snap.
No early to late 20s circle jerk is complete without everyone in the room playing with their Pocket Monsters.
Everybody loves Pokemon. I remember when I was working at McDonald's, and a friend of mine, he's this, I don't want to sound racist here, but he's a stereotypical, you know, black gangster smoke weed kind of guy. You know, he's really, you know, really kind of ghetto. And we would have the nerdiest conversations about Pokemon. It was amazing. We'd be at McDonald's, you know, and we'd just be talking for hours about playing Pokemon Red and Blue and reminiscing about that. It's the kind of game that everybody's familiar with. It resonates with everybody. And it's a game that I think there's a lot to learn from in terms of game design, in terms of the things that it does.
I want to go on a slight tangent about Pokemon. And they've recently announced a new version for the 3DS, Pokemon X and Y.
Yes.
And it looks amazing. But a lot of people have been saying, oh, well, it's just a skin change. A lot of complaints I've seen throughout the recent things is just, oh, well, it's always the same game because I go through 8 gym leaders and fight the Elite Four, and I've never played any of the newer games beyond that surface level, so I'm just going to stick with this judgment. One thing,
but what's wrong with that?
No, that's what I want to say. This is my tangent about this whole Pokemon thing is, and through interviews with the guys who make it and all that stuff, basically – it's a really good lesson in game design, as in you've got a core formula. Yes, you're going to have your 8 gyms in the Elite Four. And through interviews, Game Freak has basically said, you know, we're not going to swap out that formula because we like to keep that in so both people who have played the games before have a bit of familiarity, and people who haven't played the games before, because guess what? Kids grow up and then new kids come along, and some people haven't played all the older Pokemon games. Little bit of world perspective. When the new people show up, they have a little tutorial. They've got the thing to go through. The reason how the Pokemon games change is not just, oh, well, they changed some graphics, or, oh, they added another 100 Pokemon. It's the types of stuff you can do beyond that. I mean, in later generations, I mean, beyond the graphical upgrades, they added stuff like contests, berries.
The day-night system that happened in Generation 2.
The day-night system, having the realistic clock, Pokemon breeding. There's all these type of things that really add subtle nuances to the gameplay that you don't really get to experience until you've really gotten into the heart of the game. And, even the latest ones, Black 2 and White 2, they included stuff like the movies, which if you're not in the story, then why are you playing Pokemon? And I don't like, oh my god, Pokemon story, it's so anime kiddie. I mean, like, if you're not into reading and just experiencing characters tinkering around, then, you know, Pokemon may not be for you. Or unless you just really like turn-based battles. I mean, the movie aspect I thought was great because I get to take my Pokemon and use them in something that isn't exactly battles, and it's not just a contest for BS prizes. I get to put them in these little mini stories, make choices, and I can affect how the ending plays out. And when I finish, I get fans, and the fans give me items. Like, I spent a good day just going through that whole movie mini game, and I'm decked out with all kinds of healing items, recovery items. Revives and a bunch of other shit, then I'm like, shit, I don't have to spend money on that. I can spend money on the other stuff because they also have this whole little market type thing where people you encounter online can either come along and go, I want to visit this shop. And if you tell them to the right shop, your market upgrades and the shops level up, and you can have your friends open up their own shops. They'll say, oh, I'd love to be able to sell, ancient shit. And they open up an antique shop and you're like, sweet, the antique shop levels up, you get more rare items. And a bunch of other stuff that, you know, you can experience throughout the game, but also adds a bit of a metagame quality to it. And it also, the story is also improved through the rest of them. So it's, long story short,
Pokemon is a really deep experience. There is yes. just so much to do. So much to do.
On the surface level, they are very identical because you have your core formula. You don't need to break the core formula just because you really want novelty. You need to accept the core formula and also look at what they add on the side to it. What do they add around it? What do they add to that core formula? So
yeah, exactly. I have so much respect for Pokemon in general because that is one of the few games where they have a formula and they don't fuck it up, basically. Like, you see all these new games, like Final Fantasy 15, we're going to have guns and everything, and like, why? You had a great formula, you didn't mess it up, and Game Freak stayed true to that, and it's a really good game design tangent because you don't mess up something that's good, basically, and I really do respect them for what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean,
speaking of formulas, we got two more games we want to talk about before we end this discussion, and those are also both Nintendo games that follow a pretty strict formula. Paper Mario, or, you know, just Mario in general, but Paper Mario in terms of the RPGs.
Yes.
And The Legend of Zelda.
Yes!
I mean, these are the kind of games that everybody should be familiar with.
Yes.
These are the kind of games that we're not going to be telling you anything new about these games, but instead we should just... I think the idea is that these games are strong influences on us and everybody else, and the game design world as a whole. You know, professional developers who are making, you know, AAA games, they still look back to The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time for what they can learn from that kind of game experience.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, Paper Mario, I haven't played.
What?
I have them! Why? I have them! I'm going to get to them. It's on my queue. Don't worry. I own all of them. I just haven't gotten to them yet.
Oh, my video. Original Paper Mario on N64 is just mind-blowingly good RPG. It's
amazing. I've played Super Mario RPG, and I've played the handheld Mario RPGs, Mario and Luigi, and I really like those.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah. And I love seeing the Mario universe being put into an RPG stuff, like, especially with Super Mario RPG. I was just like, oh, sweet, it's Final Fantasy, but I'm playing as Mario. This is great.
I love how they're able to inject so much more gameplay into the battle system itself.
Yes.
How
being
they can
able
put
to
so much more interactivity into it, and humor, yeah. and...
Being able to get extra hits, tap the buttons at the right time, or, you know, getting extra damage if you... You know, adding that whole timed hits type thing really adds to the whole humdrum of regular turn-based battles.
Yeah, the battles are really exciting in Paper Mario.
Yeah, and then Legend of Zelda, I mean, just wins all kinds of
dungeons. Dungeons.
Dungeons. You want to design dungeons? Fucking play Zelda. Zelda does dungeons really well. Good puzzles, good pacing, good enemies, good atmosphere. It's well done. You can take stuff from Zelda and put it to regular RPGs. Look at Lufia 2. I mean, it's not the puzzles aren't as good as Zelda, but you can look. It's not just simply I'm gonna have a room, and the greatest obstacle is you're randomly gonna get jumped by bats. It's no. What are you in? You're in an ice cave. Fucking slide across the ground. You're in a volcano. Have platforms that sink. You know, just fire pillars. Use your imagination, and that's really what all these games that we're talking about that should aspire to all use. Use your imagination. Sit there and go. You know what? This is the world they're in. What type of hazards can they encounter?
Remember, puzzles are not patented. You can make puzzles. It's okay, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But something I actually want to...
Puzzles are a feature.
Yeah, exactly. But something I want to jump into real quick is what I mentioned before about Pokemon changing the formula, and I really, really hate to say this, but Paper Mario has done this. They did change the formula with their recent title, and everyone hates it.
I didn't like Super Paper Mario very much.
No,
I mean, it was a good game, but I wanted another Paper Mario.
Yeah, it's not a Paper Mario. It's a game. It's fun, but it's not Paper Mario like I remember it. But the newest Paper Mario changed the formula, and everyone hated it. That's just a good example.
The sticker one?
Yeah.
No one likes it.
Don't get rid of experience points.
I haven't played that yet.
The whole reason I want to do battles is to level up. If you take away that and only give me money, I'll just do everything but fight.
Or stickers.
Forget it. Basically, if I can get stuff outside of... Basically, if your battles offer me nothing but attacking, I'm not going to do your battles. If I can get everything in a fight without fighting, I'm just going to avoid all battles because I'm like, I don't need...
And then it's just a $50 book at that point, so what the hell's the point?
Pretty much the one thing you want to keep in mind is whatever you put into a game, make sure it has a purpose. Make sure the player feels like they've spent their time wisely. So, my final thoughts on this whole subject, are basically going to be that no matter what you do throughout all these games, is use your imagination, try and mix stuff up, but at the same time, don't feel that you have to do something brand spanking new. It's basically just, you know, is this going to be fun? And play your other games, and just while you're playing your other games, keep in mind that you want to make your game also have its own identity. Like, you know, how Psychonauts. I'm playing Psychonauts, Metroid Prime. I'm playing Metroid Prime. You don't want people to play your game and go, oh, I'm playing this, which I'm a chief violator in that. People are looking at my game and going, oh, hey, it reminds me of Dragon Quest. But anyways, Killam, what are your final thoughts?
What
are your final thoughts?
Sorry about that. Anyway, guys, your childhood, the games you played, you love those games. They're fun. Make those games, but add your own touch. Make sure you always, what Despain said before, your game has to be your game. When I look at your game, I shouldn't say, oh, hey, this looks like Final Fantasy VI. Not to toot my own horn or anything. But, yeah.
Hey, Killam, your game looks a lot like Final Fantasy VI.
Wow, thanks, Raynard. No, but basically, take what you loved about your childhood and the games you played, put them in your game, but make it your own game, if that kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Try and mix familiarity with uniqueness. Like, you want your game to stand out, obviously, so people can play it, but at the same time, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type stuff. It's try and make it stand out, try and make your gameplay awesome. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
What do you think, Despain?
Yeah, my final thought is that influences can be a wonderful, great thing. And as long as you recognize that you are getting influences, you can't just straight up rip off something else, you know? But yeah. To take little bits of pieces of ideas here and there, to take inspirations, figure out what a game does nicely, figure out what a game does well, figure out what you like about a game, what you don't like about a game. If you can incorporate those things, not just into your own games, but into your whole philosophy about game design, then you can just grow so much and improve yourself. And I think that's what it's really about. Just having a critical eye about everything and recognizing what you can do to make yourself better at
yes.
what you want to be doing.
Yes, definitely. When you're looking at the games you play and the inspirations, find out what about that feature, what about that game is fun, not just, oh, this feature people like, let me slap it in there. It's more of what's fun about it, make your game fun. Bruh. Cohesion! Yay!
Yeah, cohesion is huge. All right, so Raynard, we had a question last week. You want to talk about that?
Yes, last week, we asked you guys, would you or have you bought a game made in RPG Maker? And the general consensus amongst many of you
nope.
was that they haven't, but they would if the game itself that was on offer really stood out, had a unique look or style to it. Basically, if it looked beyond, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, beyond a hobbyist level. I mean, hobby games or people where they're just, I'm going to slap something together and have fun with it, those games are often free. So people download those and play those. But when you're asking for a price tag, the general consensus amongst the community on RPG Maker Web and Final Boss Blues has been that people have a bit more of a higher expectation when they're asking for money, which is totally reasonable. Because if I'm going to spend money on something, I want to get my money's worth. So what everyone basically said is, if the game looks like it's worth money, if it stands out, if it looks like something I haven't played before, or if it looks like something I have played before, it at least mixes some other type of element up, then they would buy it. So the thing to take away from that is to don't use RTP. This week, we're going to ask you a question, and that question is going to be in line with our topic, and that is, what games influence your approach to game design? What type of games, movies, shows, whatever, inspire you and really help you, you know, make the games that you want to make? Like, growing up, what has been the type of things that have stood out with you and resonated with you? So, with that, we're going to move on to wrapping up this fine rodeo. Killam, if you would do the honors.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us on the 10th episode, which is also known as the first real episode of the podcast. You guys can find us on finalbossblues.com, where you can check out the podcast there. We have a Twitter set up, too, at Final Boss Blues. And if you want to follow Raynard, you can follow him, too, at Raynard Frost. Feel free to leave the question of the week on the RPG Maker forum thread or FinalBossBlues.com or the Twitter. And thank you for listening. This has been Killam,
Raynard Frost,
and Despain.
Thank you, and good night! So, I don't know, Metroid Prime looks kind of like shit. Is it worth buying?
Buy Metroid Prime!